This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Count it up, count it up, count it up, count it, count it up, count it up, count it up. Count it.
Hour two Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, Dave Festchuk of the Toronto Star, Eddie Petrillo, the great Pam Shriver will join us later this hour on Serena Williams announcing she is evolving away from her playing days. Not retiring, just evolving away from her playing days. And she's currently in Toronto. She's into the next round. Layla Annie Fernandez had to grind last night. Storm Sanders, what a handle that is. And Storm was putting up a pretty good fight, but Layla found a way to win it. And she's off to the next round, and Bianca Andreescu's in action tonight. So we'll catch up with Pam a little bit later in the hour. Johnny's coming up too. Mike Johnson will join us here. 34 years ago today, the Wayne Gretzky trade, which I don't think it's really disputable that it's the most notable trade in Canadian sports history. Is there anyone that's even close to the Gretzky deal? I can't think of one.
I mean, the Kawhi trade, I mean, that's built, you know, brought the Raptors a championship, but there's nothing. It's not comparable.
Not the same relevance. Yeah. No, I mean, because of who Gretzky was, and he was leaving a Canadian team and moving the other way.
In Toronto, they were heartbroken with the Wendell Clark trade, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That worked out pretty well, though. Like, that was, well, Matt Sundin coming the other
but
way.
But how many, like, that was hard. I remember Matt Sundin talked about it. I mean, nobody was cutting him any slack in the beginning because he was the kid who came on over for the good Canadian boy.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Wendell Clark goes the other way. You got this Swedish kid coming on over. And it's like, ugh. You know, but yeah, he won the hearts over of the city. That's for
sure. He certainly
did. But it wasn't an easy start.
Credit to Matt's, right, for the perseverance because he didn't let that get him down. He didn't allow it to, you know, sour the city of Toronto and him wanting out. He battled through it. He performed. Eventually he became the captain, and he holds how many team records? You know, almost every one of significance.
Yeah, pretty much all of them until Matthews breaks them.
Yeah,
exactly.
Likely, if Matthews is around. Like, that's a big – you know, this conversation's coming up in Toronto with the Jacob Trouba captaincy announcement. Not that he's taking it off the chest of anyone else. But
no.
Will the Matthews be captain conversations, they perk up every once in a while.
Sure.
And I don't see it happening between now and the next two seasons. What I could picture is if he signs long-term, that also comes with a transition where Tavares will have 1 year left on his deal. Hey, John, you know, if Matthews is comfortable with it, I think he would have to be the one that would have to accept it, you know, being in the same room with Tavares, because that could be very awkward. We've seen it before with Joe Thornton losing the C, Marlo losing the C. Other teams have done it. It happens very rarely. But I don't think the Leafs would do that to Tavares. I don't think Matthews would want to be in that position right now. But if he signs long-term, then give it to him. He's the guy. He's your captain.
To your point, he would sign and Tavares would have one more year left. So who cares if Tavares stays on one more year as your captain? And then I don't think the Leafs would be bringing Tavares back. And if they did, they'd probably bring it back significantly less than $11 million a year.
Of course. It'd have to be the Bergeron deal.
And if you're – yeah, exactly. And if you're signing Auston Matthews to a long-term deal, then I think he's already the – as far as I'm concerned, like he is the captain in many ways. He's the one who speaks all the time. He already speaks to the media all the time. Mm-hmm. He's already the one that people always want to request for community events or speaking to sponsors or all that kind of stuff. He's the one who talks to referees during games if, you know, doesn't like a call that goes a certain way. Like, he already does the things that a captain does. And I know – The players, they all, like, you know, they're a tight-knit group. They like him. They look up to him. And, of course, he'll have however many years under his belt at that point. 100% he's captain material.
Oh, of course. I don't dispute captain material. But until he is the captain, he's not the captain.
Yeah, captain duties, I think, is what he's already doing, I guess,
sure.
Is what I'm trying to
and
say.
I think
right
Marner
now.
Would probably accept some of that responsibility. He speaks every day. Morgan Riley speaks every day. They do it by committee. That's always the case now in the modern game, for sure. But you know, Tavares, it's not, and there hasn't been any issues that I'm aware of, like within the room or any turmoil. You know, there's been no moments of embarrassment, you know, where players have done something stupid that would put them in a position, you know, in recent years anyway, to embarrass themselves, the team, et cetera. So, you know, there's no reason to believe that Tavares is doing anything but a very good job. You know, it's just it's the symbolism more than anything else. you know, well, what
I also
Matthews
just, it's
represents.
What you do on the ice, too. Like, I just think that Tavares just is, I mean, he's getting older, he's getting, so I just think it's the role as well that, you know, it just makes sense that Austin Matthews, if he ends up signing a long-term deal, that it just means he has a bigger role. He's the number one guy. He's the go-to guy. He's also just your captain because he just leads by example out on the ice as well, which is why I think he would always, you know, we've had this conversation before. It's so difficult to be a leader, even if you bring in, you know, an older guy who's been around a while, unless he still has an impact on the ice, how can he have a voice in the room? You can't be like, you got to do this and rah, rah, and come on and let's go. And then you're playing 5 minutes a night, right? Or,
oh, yeah.
Whatever. Like,
that doesn't
you still
work.
Have to have an
you're
impact.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. You're
and
right.
That,
and they,
and Tavares still has an impact. He's still, you know, basically not quite a point-a-game guy, but he's capable of being a very good player. He still is a very good player. You know, that's the expectation moving forward. I don't think that is going to change. I expect he scores 30-plus next year and 65-plus points.
But what about 2025? Like, that's
well,
my,
that's
like,
a different story.
I'm not saying...
Very different story.
Let's make it perfectly clear, because I know this. Our little bug here says, should Matthews be Leafs captain before Tavares' contract is up? My
that's
answer
right.
is no. My answer is no. Tavares is your captain
until
his contract is up. But that's what I'm saying. Like, come 2025, a lot can happen in 3 years.
But hang on, okay. Hang on, guys. Like, I totally understand where you're coming from. John Tavares hasn't done anything that we know of to lose the job necessarily. Except, guys, it's not. They haven't won, and if they don't win again next spring, like, how many years can you go just saying everything's fine? Status quo.
Well, the symbolism of that would be interesting now. But Matthews has been on all those teams. All right, let's bring in Johnny. Here's Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Can you reason with any scenario that would lead to a captaincy change in Toronto between now and opening night? Can you picture any scenario where that would make sense?
No, none whatsoever.
No.
I mean, unless both parties were really on board and somehow wanted it. You know what I mean? Like, if John Tavares wanted to give it up, and if Austin Matthews wanted to have it on his chest, then maybe. But no, there's no room for it. And the one thing we're not considering, and I'm not saying this is true one way or the other, is does Austin Matthews really want the captaincy? I mean, like, I know it's an honor and it's very symbolic. I don't think it would change a thing in how either player operates as far as their role or their vocals or anything like that. The only thing I could see it changing before the end of Tavares' contract is if somehow it was tied into an Austin Matthews extension. Then, if he signs 8 years next summer, you're like, okay, listen, we're going to go forward with this guy? Then maybe, but I can't imagine that would happen before this year. And also, I'll say this, Hayes, I'm taking a strong over on your 65 points. Strong over on 65 points for John Tavares.
Strong over. Okay. What's the number that would make you think under? Okay. What if it's 74.5?
74.5. Oh, did you just know what you just said?
That's exactly right. That's right.
That seems more feasible. 74.5.
You gamblers.
Yes. But 65, I think that's a lock.
I would suggest it is too. Like, based on the numbers he's put up, you know, like I saw a stat the other day. You know, the numbers he's put up here have been more than the numbers he put up with the Islanders, I believe, his last 4 years in New York. You know, now it's bloated a little bit. His first year here, he had 47 goals and I want to say 87 points, which was a career year across the board. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, Tavares, what about goals? 34.5, would you go over or under?
That's a tougher number. I would think that I would be inclined to take the under. But he's got to be on the power play, right? Like, that, you got to remember, he can pick up a lot of points and a lot of goals in that power play. That power play should stay good. All the players are there to return themselves. So, his 5-on-5 production has dropped a little bit, but I still think, even in what was considered, a down year last year for him, somehow, what do you have? 70, he was like 1 or 2
points. 76
points.
But we spoke to Sheldon Keefe, right?
Right.
Remember, he was asking him to kind of play a little bit more of that defensive game too, right? So
I think,
you know,
that might be Sheldon style. That might be Sheldon protecting his guy a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, you say that he asked him to play more defense. I mean, the reality was at times him and William Nylander were not great at 5-on-5 together. They were getting outscored, giving up a lot of chances against. So that might be protecting your play a little bit. But anyways, yes, I get it. He's not as good as Austin Matthews. Guess what? There might be like one player in the world you could put on the team that is as good as Auston Matthews. There's no slight in saying you're the second center here in Toronto. That's what he is. That's okay. You know, I don't think his demise is here just yet.
So, MJ, we make a big deal out of captaincies, and I think, you know, the merchandisers make a big deal out of it because you get a new jersey you can sell in the shop. And I know GMs care because you often see teams in turmoil. San Jose Sharks come to mind, and Hayes brought it up about, you know, Marlowe and Thornton both losing the C in that scenario. But as a player, like, how much did you care about who was your captain?
I didn't care very much about who was captain. You know, because the leader, the room functions as its own little organic environment, right? And as we mentioned, whether you have a C or not doesn't always influence who takes on a lead role, who talks more, who does whatever. Now, it certainly matters to the guy. I mean, I think for his own pride, but also for his own responsibility. And I played in Toronto. I played in Montreal. And those teams, like, there's just more to do when you're a captain, whether it's corporate, whether it's media, whether it's interactions with the GM. Like, there's just more to do. And I think it matters, like, the responsibility that guy takes on. You know, Saku Koivu was the captain my 1 year when I was in Montreal. And, like, you get asked to do a lot. So it doesn't matter to me who it does. Like, I'm almost glad it wasn't me because it's just a lot to take on. But I don't know how much it really matters to the players, as long as, because the leader is the leader regardless who has the C. And I don't think it would influence much of what goes on at all.
Do you think it matters who picks it? I know, and I guess it varies from team to team, but do you like it when the players vote for their own captain or the coach just appointing a captain?
Well, Andy, like, we're going to take it back to when we're, like, in, like, novice Adam, where you, like, the team voted and you kind of hope to get the votes, and you're like, I don't think the players, I never want to trust the players to make hockey any kind of decision. Like, hockey players are not dialed in that way. I don't want the players in any sort of influence on player transaction, on roles, on systems. Like, I'll have a conversation, but I'm not putting a ton of stock in, like, we need to trade for this player. We need to play a different system. Like, they don't think like that. Like, that's not really what they're all about. So I kind of toe the line all the way to the captaincy because, you know, it's not a popularity contest per se. It's it's got other elements involved in it. So I think it should be an organizational decision. Maybe you want to have a conversation, certainly with the guys who might be the captain, because I think it was Artemi Panarin with the Rangers who's like, I don't really want to ever wear a captaincy here. And I don't blame them. Like, there are some guys who don't want that responsibility, don't want to put in the time for all the extra stuff you got to do. So, no, Andy, I'm steering clear of asking the players to do much of anything on the team that I run.
With Mike Johnson, a TSN hockey analyst. Johnny, you're out in Edmonton. The World Juniors have now officially begun. Canada will play their first game tomorrow against Latvia. And I'm curious what the buzz is. There's been a lot of speculation, but we're in mid-August. It's in Edmonton. Mm-hmm. What's life like out there? What's the buzz like around this tournament?
Well, I mean, I haven't gone over the rink yet today. I'm calling the late game tonight, so USA-Germany in a few hours. But, I know that the building won't be full up and fully running. Like, they're tarping off the upper bowl to kind of keep all the fans down below. There hasn't been a ton of signage. You know what it's like when sometimes you get to a place where it's an all-star game and there's signage everywhere. So it hasn't been that. But I will say this, Abe, and I think this is what will come through as this tournament goes along. We're in a hotel here, and we have Team USA, Germany, Sweden. And talking to the guys, their coaches, and some of their families, they're jacked. Like, it's very, very important. They're completely into it. They're fired. Like, they're very much engaged in the opportunity to play the tournament. They don't care that it's August. Yeah, it's a little weird. It's hot out. They're coming off drafts and development camps and whatever. But, you know, they want the opportunity to play for their countries. They want the opportunity to win, you know, a very prestigious championship. And so for those players, they're very much into what's going on, even if the city, maybe it's a bit of a slow-growing burn of interest that will probably happen as the tournament gets going and teams start doing well and storylines develop.
Well, Johnny, I think we also know a big reason why a lot of people are kind of feeling blasé about this. I mean, number one, yeah, it's weird, right? World Juniors, they're around the holidays. So, you know, I look out my window, there's supposed to be snow when I'm watching this tournament, but instead I'm melting away. But also just everything that's going on with Hockey Canada. We know this, right? That's why there's no signage. Sponsors have pulled out, right? The boards are noticeably bare. I'm sure that also affects any kind of activations or parties that we're going to be happening in and around the arena. And I gotta say, like, I kind of know, like, the position you're in as a broadcaster, because there always seems to be some sort of drama heading into the Olympics. But I think you kind of answered it there, where it's like, how are the actual athletes feeling, right? Because there's the world outside the tournament and how we're seeing things, but then there's the world inside the tournament where there's still a trophy to be won here. So obviously they're jacked, they want to win it. You kind of answered that. I don't know if you heard anything of other countries and maybe things that they've been saying about Hockey Canada.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like, listen, I don't want to be naive and act like, you know, what's going on with Hockey Canada and the stories that have come out and is not a part of the conversation and is not part of the interest or the attendance and certainly the sponsorships, corporate, otherwise. And it is. And hopefully that will help foster change that's important going forward. But the other, honestly, I mean, I don't want to, you know, we don't talk. It's not the first thing he comes up with the other players and the other teams. I mean, they're aware of it, but it's not something that is, you know, super pertinent to what they're trying to accomplish right now. You know what I mean? Like they're mostly concerned about trying to play and not necessarily about the administrative legal issues that might be going on for the Canadian governing body. Like, it's just not something, the same way that, you know, Canadian athletes aren't going to be super concerned about what's happening with whatever when they go to the Olympics with somebody from a different country and what's going on there. So they're mostly just focused on the sport. So, that's kind of where it stands. It is definitely a different kind of experience. Now, I haven't been to a ton of World Juniors. I've only called a couple of them. So, you know, I'm stepping into this one, which is going to be different all the way around. Even if the stuff with Hockey Canada wasn't happening, it would still feel different. And it probably is just exacerbated an already kind of strange tournament given the calendar.
Well, and that's, I mean, there's a lot of different forces kind of going against the idea of buzz starting to pick up. But once the puck drops and if they're chasing gold, I think naturally a lot of Canadians will certainly be attracted to that. I also think it's got to be individual players. And there's one in particular that for me can, I don't want to say save the tournament, but build up the tournament. And it's Connor Bedard for the Canadians. Like, everyone knows about, if you're a hockey fan, even if you're just a Fairweather fan, you've heard his name. You're aware of what he's accomplished already in the WHL. You remember what he did before the stoppage of the original World Junior Games, before the COVID shutdown. And he's going first overall more than likely. He's playing, projected to be on the top line. Like, that's what I see coming here, is that Bedard, if he lights up Latvia tomorrow, that story will take on a life of itself.
Yes. Absolutely, and that's kind of the name that comes up from any sort of interested fan or party or country or player or whatever is this guy, because this is not generally a draft eligible tournament. Like, those guys, those players don't make the team very often, and they don't really have big roles when they do make the team. And so it's strange for a guy his age to be on the first line, on the first power play, and to be looked at as the go-to offensive player on the team. But that's what he is, and he has the opportunity to kind of capture the imagination, because without Slavkovsky here, Owen Power, you know, some of the other big-name players that are eligible, he has the opportunity to become the guy in this tournament. So, yes, absolutely, we'll be paying close attention to everything that he does, and it's a lot of pressure for a young player to deal with, and in a tough tournament. Like, the other teams are pretty good as well. So watch him, and also one more name, Hayes, for you is Jesper Wallstedt, the goaltender for Sweden. He has a chance to also kind of be a central figure in this tournament, Minnesota draft pick. From all reports, he is maybe the most – he might be the best player in this tournament. And if he is, then Sweden's got a great chance to win a gold medal.
MJ, before this thing gets rolling, let's talk a little bit about some of the guys with big names who are eligible to play, who chose not to play. And of course, you know, topping that list would be Shane Wright. And he's not the only one, obviously. Slafkovský, the guy who went number one overall to Montreal, is also on that list. What do you make of that decision? Do you think there was value for a kid like Shane Wright to play in this one? Or can you understand with his first NHL camp coming, he wants to sit it out?
You know, I'm not going to say it was a bad idea. I mean, everyone has their own situation. I don't know what everyone's health is like and what's going on with them and what they're trying to accomplish. I will say this, though. Like, it's one thing, you know, Slafkovský has a chance to make Montreal, right? And so if you think, okay, I play in the World Juniors, I play in the World Championships, I play in the Olympics, he's done a lot of international things and done really well. Like, I could see why he would say, you know what, I'm going to stick this one out and try to prepare myself to try to make Montreal. I don't think Shane Wright has a great chance of making Seattle. So, you know, he was the chance to go play in a tournament, maybe be a great player, be the best player, boost your confidence, boost your ego, boost your profile, and then head into camp feeling great about himself. I don't know where his head's at after what happened during the draft where he sat there for 20 minutes going and forth. But I would have thought, like, just based on his hockey career, it's not a terrible spot to go play and play a significant role in a team that can win a gold medal, which probably helps you long-term, even if you feel it doesn't aid your preparation for this upcoming fall. Because I don't think it matters what happens this upcoming fall. I don't think he probably makes the NHL anyways. But each guy's in his own individual situation. But for every guy who doesn't show up, that's another guy who does. And that's going to be some great stories about players who weren't on the Christmas tournament that was stopped that have opportunities now to do something special because some guys have chosen not to come.
Yep, the scouts are going to be there. Like, you know, a lot of these guys, again, like Shane Wright and others, they've already been drafted. Slafkovský's been drafted, but scouts are out there. Go ahead, Andy.
Yeah, I was going to say, MJ, since, you know, 2009, after Canada won five straight, it really feels like it's anyone's guess who's going to win this tournament, right? I mean, even as Canadians, we still feel confident going on in, but it's just it just doesn't feel like that guarantee the way it used to in the early 2000s. So heading into this one, who's the favorite? Who's a dark horse?
It's tough because these guys haven't played for so long, right? Like, it's all coming in. The teams are a little bit different. But, you know, very anti-Canadian of me to say, but I think the tournament's better when you're not exactly sure who's going to win. Like, everyone loves to celebrate Canada's successes, myself included. But, you know, when you're not sure who's going to win, that's not a bad thing. I mean, I think it's Sweden, Finland, U.S., Canada. Those are the four teams that probably have, a legitimate chance to win a gold medal. And the question mark for Canada might be their defense. And the question mark for the U.S. might be their goaltending. Question mark for Finland might be their offense. And for Sweden, I just told you, Jesper Wallstedt, I think he might be the answer for Sweden if they win the gold. So I think it's Canada, Sweden to win. And then, you know, U.S. has won lots of this tournament many times, but it's never gone back-to-back. They have three draft-eligible goaltenders. Like, all their goalies did not show that they were expecting to play that were on the Christmas tournament. So they're a bit of an unknown, but I would say they're the dark horse because they're goaltending, but Sweden and Canada would be the favorite.
Well, enjoy it out there, Johnny. Have yourself a great call tonight. The Canadian game's starting tomorrow. It's going to be a fun ride, and I'm sure we'll do this a lot over the next couple of weeks. So thank you for this.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
You got it. Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Build your next dream Toyota at Maple Toyota and check out Maple Toyota's pre-owned inventory arriving daily. It's red tag days. Visit MapleToyota.com. Canada, Latvia tomorrow. And, we'll see. You know, we'll see what's the 50-50 going to get to. You know, usually in Edmonton, in Alberta around Christmas, that thing hits like 12 million. What's it going to get to? That's where my
Crazy.
Mind goes. Where's the 50-50 at?
Yeah, it'll build. I mean, and this by no means in any way is to downplay, obviously, what we know has been going on with Hockey Canada. But I do believe that, you know, as tournaments go on, right? And again, like I've been through this, you know, with the Olympics, they hate the host site, they hate this, they hate that. But then people can't help but just get behind the actual athletes, right? Because you do realize this isn't their fault, this isn't them, but this still means so much to them, right? Like, as we know, for a lot of these athletes too, this catapults their career. Or, you know, this is like a memory that they look back on. Like, this is so special. And it's true. Like, as the tournament goes on, I think more people get involved because they just start to see the purity of the sport, and they start to see also what it means, you know, to this group of athletes, and you start to just separate a little bit. Like, we're going to deal with that garbage because that's what it is, right? We're going to deal with that, but, like, don't hang it over their head type of thing, right? So,
yeah.
It'll be good. It'll be good for these
kids. The games themselves, they have a real chance. They're going to be entertaining. There's going to be very entertaining games, and there'll be very memorable moments, you know, highlight reel goals, big hits, all the action you can expect. But you got to get the puck drop before you really, I think, people are going to dive in. You know, in terms of anticipation, build-up, it was always going to feel unnatural anyway because it's August.
Yeah.
And then in this country, because of what's been going on with Hockey Canada, takes on a completely different complexion, you know.
And that's
altogether.
So weird. We're having the World Juniors in summer, and we're having the FIFA World Cup in winter.
Right. Yeah. No kidding. How do we – I mean, we know why this happened because of COVID, but the World Cup in November in Qatar is so stupid.
Well,
although,
we all know the –
if it were in the summer, it would have been over by now. So think about it that way, Andy. You know, we still have the World Cup to look forward to. It'd be better than it having already played out. And is Italy in this World Cup? I can't.
You know what? You're not funny. You're not funny. That's why. Listen, I got
just
whatever. I got Canada to cheer for. Can I just? Anyways, it doesn't matter. Don't get me started on this crap. If you're the European champion, you should automatically be granted a spot in the World Cup. It's
so
stupid how they do it. Anyways,
okay.
I'm starting to sweat.
Shame.
Go.
That's a
go to break.
If we're going to break, we're going
we should
to break.
Go to break. We'll let you jump in and jab at Andy a little bit more later on. Pan Shriver will join us on Serena Williams evolving away from the sport. How does Pam feel about that, you know, language? And what does she make of Serena's chances here in Toronto at the U.S. Open? Bianca in action tonight. Layla Fernandez with a win last night. That more coming up with Pam. We'll get into that chat next. All right, tennis continuing here in Toronto. The women are here in Toronto. The men are in Montreal. Bianca Andreescu will hit the court tonight. Layla Fernandez with a big win last night. It was a battle. It was a grind, but she was victorious in the end, and she's been recovering from that foot injury for a couple of months. And she looked good. Serena, though, is in town, and she won. She's off to the next round. Serena Williams announcing via a Vogue magazine interview that she will be evolving away from the tennis world in, I guess, September after the U.S. Open. Mm-hmm. Not retiring, even though it is, in fact, a retirement. She just doesn't like the word retirement. It's evolving away. So I like it because
I'm
going to use it. Yeah, I plan on using it a lot throughout my life. It's just an easier way. It's, I guess, not as harsh of a way to explain maybe what you're going through. Right? Describe what you're going through. Nothing wrong with
but
that.
But it's also the truth. You're evolving. You've done everything you can do as a
but
player.
But you can't play anymore. She's evolving because she can't compete anymore at the highest level. That's actually what's happening here, but evolving.
Well, hold on a second. Because can we make the argument that she can't compete? Because she is still fierce. She's still a competitor. But she has just said that there's so many other things she wants to do in life. Yes, she's slowing down. Listen,
she's not 25 years old anymore.
She's not 25. But she, in that article, goes on to say that there is so much that she wants to do, other things that she wants to do that she can't because the demand of playing prevents that. So she's at this crossroads in her
life. Let's ask Pam Shriver. Pam probably can describe this more appropriately and more accurately. Here's longtime pro tennis player, ESPN tennis analyst back on Overdrive, Pam Shriver. How would you describe what's going on here with Serena, Pam? Is this about future plans and goals and aspirations or the fact that she can't compete the way she wants to compete?
Well, thanks for having me on. It's obviously a big day for tennis with the news of Serena evolving, retiring, however you want to phrase. Yeah, you know, the great thing about tennis, though, is there's so many ways to stay involved as you evolve. And I think that should give her some comfort. It's been a long time since I stepped away after just 19-year career. Nowhere near as amazing as Serena's, but I've managed to stay in love with the sport, involved with the sport. So it's not like you leave tennis. You just have to leave the most elite level because it's time and she wants to have a bigger family. She's going to be 41 next month, and I know all too well because I had all sorts of complications trying to have kids when tennis and life got in the way. And, you know, I had my first at 42 and the twins at 43. So it's not that easy when you hit that 40-plus number to have kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Pam, she had gone on to say, like, hey, I hate that I have to even think about this, right, as a woman, because if you're a guy playing tennis, you're obviously not worried about this. But that's just nature that, you know, the woman is the one that has the baby. But what are we, like, when you hear that, though, that she's not going to be playing anymore, and we understand, obviously, other things that she wants to do in life, but is that a gut punch to the sport in many ways? Like, it's just, you know, she is such a draw.
Yeah, listen, it's the start of many gut punches over the coming years of really the greatest era of tennis players going to be, you know, retiring, evolving, or however they want to phrase it, whether it's Venus next or Federer and then Nadal. So this is just the first of several that's going to be tough for the sport. But this is what happens, right? And we've got some great new blood. But in the meantime, I think it's really about taking a moment and celebrating the 25-year playing career, professional playing career. And you don't get that in tennis maybe two or three times in the history of our sport. Maybe Ken Rosewall hit, you know, mid-20s. Very, very few. And to be able to soak up, I'm glad she's come out with this article because now we know, and people in Toronto this week can celebrate her. Cincinnati, I think U.S. Open's going to be crazy every time she plays, probably the most raucous and celebratory, I think, player we've ever seen play at the U.S. Open. We've had a lot of great champions finish at the U.S. Open, but I think Serena is going to be a celebration like we've never seen because I think U.S. Open's responsible for some of her most challenging moments. So I think this is a time for the U.S. Open and the New York crowd to just embrace like they never have.
On that note as well, like I think it is great because now it gives the fans the opportunity to say farewell. But how important maybe do you think it is, or how much of an impact do you think it is that she's been so open and honest in saying that this is not easy for her? Like she goes on to talk about Ash Barty, who was just ready to leave, and so many other athletes who were like, yep, got to go, done. And you would think with her accomplishments, with all the titles that she's won, with the money that's in the bank, this should be an easy walk away. But for her to be so open and honest and say, there's only things that I've told my therapist, just how important do you also think that is in this era as well of athletes who have been so open and honest about mental health and kind of putting that first, that she's also like, I'm one of the best and this stinks even for me. Like what kind of impact do you think that has on other athletes?
Well, I thought it was one of many fascinating parts of her essay in Vogue. I thought her level of sharing some of her most intimate thoughts and frustrations and just sort of, I don't want to use the word anger, but just that she has to make this choice and needs to leave in order to start a family and really get into the next phase wholeheartedly and not sort of try and do everything, you know, like be a pro tennis player, be a venture capitalist, be a mom, be a wife. I think she finally realized at almost 41 that she can't do it all. So this is like one of the greatest competitors of all time. And of course, she's not going to like admitting the fact that she can't do something, even though no one's ever done what she's done before. So I just think it's another showing of her greatness is the way she's taking how hard she's taking this next phase.
We're chatting with Pam Shriver, former pro tennis player, ESPN tennis analyst. Go ahead, Dave.
Pam, I was interested. You talk about great competitors. There's a competitor that Canada fell in love with, and it was 3 years ago around this time that Bianca Andreescu beat Serena Williams to win the Canadian Open here in Toronto and then went on to beat her in the U.S. Open. And since then, of course, she's struggled to, you know, fight health, both mental health and physical health, and definitely struggled to get back to that height as a competitor. What do you make of that struggle that Andreescu's been on, and what do you think her chances are to sort of get back to that player that captivated her country and the world, really?
Well, Bianca's not the only major winner that struggled in the months and years following the success. There's a long list right now. It feels to me with when she started to make her comeback, I believe it was in Stuttgart, you know, that she, first off, she needs to have like a couple of weeks where she has a decent draw and some good breaks. And that will come as long as she's willing to be patient and stays healthy. She's needed in women's tennis. She's one of a handful of those charismatic, powerful athletes that can just draw your eye. I remember being in the stadium at Arthur Ashe Stadium that final when Serena started to make the comeback in the second set. That was one of the loudest. I think that was the loudest stadium I've heard in my 45 years of being involved in pro tennis. It was crazy, and how Bianca kept her nerve. And, you know, we all want to see her back in that kind of form. It's just that she's going to need to be patient, and there is a chance that she never will quite get back to that young sort of teenage bravado of feeling like I can't lose. I mean, when you think about that year and how little she played and how much she won, it's not done that often. Usually you have to play your way in, and that was a miraculous stretch of tennis to beat Serena both in the finals of the Rogers Cup and also the U.S. Open, given how little she played.
With Pam Shriver, it's interesting how the U.S. Open is really linking, you know, three different women in this conversation. Obviously, Serena and her greatness there and her success there. Bianca winning against Serena a few years ago that really, you know, put her on the map in this country and throughout the world. And then you've got Leila Fernandez, who – that was her arrival, was at the Open last year. And she captivated New York. She had incredible support in that final. And last night, she's back in Toronto. She won for the first time in Canada. She had no history of winning up here. She's coming off an injury. She really had to battle to beat Storm Sanders last night. But, you know, she's planning clearly on making an impact here, but getting back to New York and hopefully being able to replicate what she did a year ago. How would you handicap the chances that she can do that?
Well, listen, if I can relate a bit. I got to U.S. Open finals when I was 16 and 2 months. It was my second major. It came out of nowhere. I really struggled in the coming 12 to 15 months with both my health, as I was an athlete. I also struggled with the expectations of being a major finalist. I think it's going to be really difficult for both Leila and Emma to return to the U.S. Open. But I would just, before we kind of project what will happen this year, I just want to kind of recap the incredible run, starting with her three-set win over Osaka that started four straight three-set wins. And I always try and test my memory because I think it was Osaka, Kerber, Svitolina, Sabalenka to get to the final to play against Raducanu. It was one of the most incredible things, and they played that match on 9/11. And the way Leila handled not just the match, but also a lot of people remember her post-match speech in such a sensitive way for a teenager to sort of lose a major final and be able to tie in the history for New York City and the country of USA into that historic date was really special because it was the 20th. It was, you know, it was 2021. So anyway, I think everyone in tennis wants to see all of these women who have had major success be back healthy and battling each other for the majors that Serena was able to win 23 times.
Yeah, it's an interesting time for women's tennis, for Canadian tennis. We're on the men's side, you know, you got Felix, you've got Dennis, but like Shapovalov is really struggling right now. He's really, really struggling. And, you know, I think it is going to be about the ladies. Again, it's going to be hopefully about Bianca and Leila and moving forward. And, you know, in terms of the U.S. Open, as you've mentioned, Pam, it will really truly be a celebration of Serena. But on the men's side, if Djokovic isn't there, and we don't believe he will be, how is that going to affect the buzz of the U.S. Open in terms of the men's bracket without Djokovic?
Well, obviously without Djokovic, without Federer, and with question marks surrounding the health of Nadal, which has been question marks all year long, listen, there's a whole bunch of young players on the men's side and several generations that have been waiting for their opportunity. So all I can say is tennis has a way, especially major tennis, and then being the last major of a year in a year that has seen more different stories, whether it was the Australian Open debacle with Djokovic, and then the moment the tournament started, it was on fire, that Australian Open, with the Nadal's run and the Medvedev final and the two sets of love comeback by Nadal, and Ash Barty winning in her home country. Little did we know it would be her last match, a major win. So tennis has a way of, despite whatever's happening going into a major, once the tournament starts, 128 men and women and the doubles and the mixed doubles and everything, stories happen, great tennis happens, and eyes will be on the U.S. Open regardless of how many of the big three are competing this year.
Well, enjoy it down in New York, Pam, and it's going to be a fun ride. Hopefully we get a chance to have you back on once you get to New York and the U.S. Open is off and running. Really appreciate you finding time for us today. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Have a great night.
You too. There's Pam Shriver, longtime tennis pro and ESPN tennis analyst.
Can I give a shout-out?
Yes.
To our boy, Marky Mark, Mark Rowe, who we know covers tennis for TSN, who just became a daddy.
That's right.
Nice.
Little baby Luke. Yes. So see, he planned it. He's like, Andy, I planned it so I can still go to US Open. I'm like, first of all, you're not that good. Don't act like you planned it.
No,
but yeah, so congratulations to our boy, Marky Mark, who's
now
covering tennis as a dad.
That's going to be a game changer. Wow. He'll be out of there for a few weeks. Wait till he gets home. What will be waiting for him will be an absolute shock to the system.
He is married to a fellow Italian.
Okay.
Love her. She is a dear. And I can just say that if he does not check in very often, he will be in a lot of trouble.
There will be check-ins.
And there will be check-ins not just with her. There will have to be check-ins with the mother-in-law. There will have to be check-ins with the nonni.
Oh, is
there
that right?
Will have to be check-ins with the entire family.
Oh, I didn't realize
he
that
knows
the whole
this.
Family tree, that every branch
he knows
has
this.
To
he
be
knows what
in.
He got into. He knows what he got
is
into.
Is that the way that goes? I had no idea. Okay. All right. Well, what
That's
about
a
group
checking
chat?
In.
Can we get a group chat going? What would happen if Mark Rowe
and
left that group chat?
Don't you dare leave that group chat.
That's a tough one. Yeah. Don't leave them on red either. That wouldn't go over well either.
Do not leave your mother-in-law's text chats on red.
Yes.
Yeah, that would be bad.
Reddit, but just don't have time. I'm in New York. I happen to be in Manhattan right now. I just, you know, I can't get back to you. Try to get back to you when I get out to Queens again.
Not going
to
go over well.
No, I don't think so. Our buddy Luke Wilson in about 20 minutes, confirm or deny, cannot confirm or deny if we'll get to confirm or deny in about 45 minutes. Hmm. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Luke Wilson in about 15 minutes. Confirm of the nine, about 40. So the O-Dog is on his way out to Edmonton for the World Junior panel. And he just sent me a text. Yeah. And I'm going to reveal this. We've talked a lot about texting today, the politics of it, leaving a group chat, leaving someone left on red. This may be breaking some social rules as well, because he sent me a text, and I'm going to reveal the details of this text.
Okay.
And he claims this is 100% true. And I think he sent me this knowing my instincts will be I got to bring this onto the air and ask the people, okay? And in this particular case, you two are the people. You people.
The people.
Yes. O claims at Pearson International, three different people thought he was Mike Trout. You buying that? Are you buying a resemblance with Mike Trout? Are you buying that? He claims it happened.
I have to be careful with what
like
I say here because I love my boy O, but is this like Mike Trout like 10 years after he retires?
Maybe that got lost in the shuffle. Like, hey, I think you look like what Mike Trout will look like 10 years after he's evolved away from baseball.
I set you up. I put that right on a tee for
any,
you, Hayes.
Any option, any opportunity I have for Evolved Away, you know I'm using it today. Mike Trout. I don't know. I just don't see it. I don't see the resemblance.
I see some resemblance there. They both have that athletic look, the big, you know, the athletic neck,
okay.
The buzz cuts.
It's the 5 o'clock shadow, too. Like, if he has his facial hair going, I can kind of see that.
Yeah, he probably does. He might be wearing an Angels hat.
We need to put it side by side. We need to put O's photo and Trout's photo side by side.
Yeah, we definitely need to see a side by side. I mean, in O's prime, and then you go down the – if you kind of scan the man, so to speak, Hayes, like, you know, O'Neill has those, you know, those beefy hands, the thick forearms. You don't become a 40-goal scorer without those thick forearms. Trout-esque forearms, I would say. So it depends on what you're looking at in the moment. You know, you could
don't
be
call O-Dog a big guy, though. Don't say, hey,
no,
big guy.
No, you can't do that. Cannot do that. Not. But Mike Trout, calling him Mike Trout is something he's very happy about.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I know people have mistaken him for Mike Ditka in the past. He didn't like that. Ditka, that's a no. Mike Trout, that's a yes.
Wow.
Very supportive.
Yeah, Trout's
Mike
31.
Trout.
O-Dog's, what, in his 40s?
Yeah, mid-40s.
It's a hell of a compliment.
It is. You know, Mike Trout bats right. The O-Dog shoots right. You know, does O-Dog have $150 million cash in a bank? I'm not sure.
He might.
He might. It's possible. But, yeah, Mike Trout. The O-Dog, Mike Trout. So,
how did that happen? Did people just walk up to him and say that, or were these his friends?
Like, who knows? Maybe he's wearing an Angels hat, and he's giving off that Trout vibe. Who knows?
We'll try to get more into some details. There's a presence there.
There's a presence. For sure. Confirm or deny, Luke Wilson coming up, and Jay's back in action tonight. We'll get back into the loss last night, tee up the game tonight. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.